May it please the court, my name is Kim Smith and I represent Mr. Foreman. I will make note that I'm the third attorney on this case, if the court would indulge me a little.
Do you care to reserve any time for rebuttal?
I actually would not, Judge. Judge, the issue here is that our argument is that Officer Krause lacks specific articulable facts that Foreman was armed and dangerous to get him out of the car and do the pat down. Clearly, we have probable cause for the stop. We've got a tag light out. The testimony of both the officers is, of course, that they comply immediately. I believe the testimony is that it was...
Counsel, let me jump
sure.
just a minute. Once you concede that there's a reason for the stop, doesn't Pennsylvania versus Mims allow the officer to take the passenger out of the car?
Judge, he could have taken the passenger out of the car if the stop is proper. Again, there's no question that the stop is proper, but Arizona versus Johnson goes on to say, but to pat him down then, which is what Officer Krause testified, his intention was in getting him out of the car, that he feared there was a weapon.
He never actually got to pat him down, did he?
Correct. Correct. Then he has to have that reasonable, individualized suspicion that he's armed and dangerous at that point, Judge. And the court went on to clarify in McCain what entailed that reasonable, individualized suspicion. They did the factor test there, and they're saying that if the officer knew the prior record of the defendant, here we don't have that, that we're looking at the nature surrounding the stop. We've got a tag light. There's nothing really inherently dangerous about that. The officers did testify that it was a high crime area. But we look at immediate compliance. They pull into a very well-lit gas station. Both officers say that the car was between 3 and 8 feet, one said 3 to 5, one said 5 to 8 feet behind the stopped car. That they've got the lights from the officer's car shining into the car. We've got the lights from the gas station, and both officers arrived with flashlights looking into the car.
Was the officer unreasonable? He said 50% of the process. In his belief that it might be a small gun or a knife?
Well, I think Officer Krause first said he was 25% sure, then he hedged and said it was 50% sure.
Well, that's not enough.
Judge,
if I think it's a 1 in 2 chance it's a gun or a knife, does not that give me the right to first?
Well, I think we have to look at it with everything else that he says, Judge. Uh-huh. He says that in shining my light on him, again, this individual is never looking at him, he's never gesturing toward him. He says that on his approach to the car, that Foreman never looks down, he doesn't reach under the seat, he does none of those things, that the hand is on his right leg, and again, that it's a clenched fist. So whatever the item is has to fit within a clenched fist, which I would argue is not a very large item at all, and that his testimony was that there's 1 inch protruding and that it was about 2 inches in diameter, which obviously our argument is that's inconsistent with a weapon. It's never displayed or brandished. It's never pointed towards. I contend that it was a very well-lit area. Again, with the lights of the cop car, with the flashlight, with the illumination of the gas station, it would seem that it was a clear glass tube, Judge, ultimately. What is contended that was in his hand.
What about the fact that the defendant wouldn't make eye contact with him, would ignore his directions, and just kept trying to put his hand back in his pocket? Aren't those things that would alert a reasonable police officer?
Judge, again, I wasn't at the trial, but the transcript, at least per Mr. Foreman, was that he wasn't paying attention because this didn't entail him. This was a traffic stop for the driver. He knew he hadn't done anything wrong. And certainly counsel argued at trial that it would have been an illegal stop or inquiry as to Mr. Foreman, that he had committed no crimes, and again, that he was just minding his own business, and in that regard, that he was allowed to disregard what Officer Krause was saying to him.
But you agree with me that the officer had the right to take him out of the car?
Judge, I think if the stop is good, the law is that he could have taken him out of the car. But again, that was not his testimony. He was saying, I needed to get him out to pat him down because I feared there was a weapon.
But there wasn't a phone. Go ahead.
Miss, tell me if I've got my facts wrong. It's my understanding that when he ordered the appellant out of the car, the appellant dropped the item onto the floorboard. Is that correct?
Judge, my understanding is that there are multiple orders to appellant.
No, that isn't my question. My question is, did he drop the item to the floor of the car when he was ordered out of the car?
Well, Officer Mackey says that he saw a hand just disappear to the right of, that he never saw anything drop. And then I think that Krause testifies that there was an item that he thought was dropped between, well, actually, he said it was in the floorboard. He doesn't describe it as being between the door
and the
seat.
And that's what
he
wants to press.
That's correct.
Well, why is it the result of a frisk?
Pardon?
Why is it the result of a frisk?
It's just something that's open and on.
He dumped it on the floor in plain view. Why was there a frisk? They didn't get it out of his pocket, out of his jacket.
He's being ordered out. Again, specifically, his statement is he was ordering him out because he feared a weapon.
Okay. And what he was worried about, your client dropped on the floorboard of the car.
I think there was at least some argument that may not have been the case for Ms. Michigan, who argued at that point. But there's an item recovered in the floor, yes, sir.
Well, if it was recovered on the floor, it wasn't recovered as a result of a frisk, was it?
But for being ordered out of the car, yes, it would not have happened.
I thought you wanted to see that he could order him out.
He could, but again, that was not his testimony, that I was just ordering him out so we could carry on with this stop. His testimony was that he feared for his safety.
What you want suppressed was not the result of a search, was it?
Judge, we contend that it was, Judge, that the seizure of his person, the getting him out to do the pat-down search, netted the item being in the floor. Yes, Judge.
So if I'm running away and I discard crack cocaine, okay, and the police pick it up, I've got a Fourth Amendment right to say that was the result of a search? Are you saying that?
I'm not sure of your entire scenario. All I heard was that someone's running away from...
But if the police pick up that on the ground, I could say, well, I want to suppress because of the result of a search.
Judge, I think that's a very different scenario than the one we have here.
Why? In each case, you discard that which the defendant discards, that which he wishes to suppress.
Well, again, Judge, we had an automobile here. We've got the two-prong test.
What's that got to do with it?
That's how we get to our facts. Again, I'm unsure, can't analogize with you the running away as to here, Judge. But I think Krause makes his whole argument that it is the seeing the shiny object in the hand that I think is a weapon, that's why I want to get this man out of the car.
Okay, but
there's nothing.
She did have a right to get him out of the car.
Judge,
that which you want to suppress, if I understand the facts, was that which your client discarded in the car.
Judge, there are no other facts surrounding the situation that tell us that these officers were reasonably in fear for their safety. We've got two individuals sitting in the car. We've got the driver being perfectly compliant. We've got the passenger looking forward. Now, he says he didn't hear the commands.
Yes, maybe I don't understand. I thought in answer to Judge O'Brien, you conceded that the police officer had the right to order this man out of the car. Did you or not?
Judge, under Mims, that is my understanding that yes, he can, but
okay.
Again, that was not why he said he ordered him out.
Does it matter?
I think so. I hope so.
Fair enough.
If I understand your argument, it's if I legitimately order someone out of a car and that someone throws something, drops something in the car, and a police officer picks it up, that's a search. Is that right?
Just why were they ordered out of the car? In your fact pattern. Why did they need to get anybody out of this car if it's just a tagline? The facts that we have are that he thinks it's a weapon and that's why he's ordered out. Absolutely could have got him out with no other criminal activity.
You've conceded they have a right to get him out of the car.
They have, but we've got all of Krause's evidence or testimony as to why he's getting him out.
I'm sorry, I apologize. I don't understand your argument. That's my fault.
You're not the first person I've confused, Judge. Anything else, Your Honor? Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Martin.
morning, Your Honors. Kathleen Martin, the Commonwealth, may it please the court. While the assignment of error in what a lot of the briefing and argument has been about, whether or not the police had reasonable suspicion to think that the defendant was armed and dangerous to do the pat down, when you really look at this case, the pat down is a non-issue. Because there was a traffic stop, they had the defendant, they had the right to get the defendant out of the car. Doesn't really matter why they wanted to take him out of the car, they could make him get out of the car. That's well established under Pennsylvania versus Mims or the McCain case from the Virginia Supreme Court. At that point, Officer Krause did a quick pat-down of the defendant, but he didn't find anything. And the evidence here that they want to suppress is the crack cocaine pipe that was found in plain view in the car. And it was not the defendant's car. The driver consented to a search of the car, and when they searched the car, they found this item, and I believe it was described as being between the passenger seat where the defendant had been sitting and the door. And so that's the evidence that they used against the defendant because it was tested and had cocaine residue. There was nothing found in the pat-down, no drugs, no weapons, no nothing. And so that's, as I said, that's really a non-issue here because the evidence that's being suppressed was found in plain view after the defendant dropped it or slipped out of his hand as he got out of the car. And so for that reason, you know, all the cases that we talked about, while, you know, if we're going to talk about reasonable suspicion, it would be the Commonwealth's position that the facts would support that. But we really don't have to deal with that because we've got this evidence that against the defendant, it was in plain view. They found it when they searched the car. There was no problem with the consent to search of the car. There was no problem with the traffic stop for the defective taillight. And so certainly, I think it's the Echeverry case where the discovery of a contraband was attenuated from the other things, and that if there was any kind of, it was an illegal entry there, but the taint was dissipated by what happened afterwards when they found cocaine, I believe, in the defendant's wallet. And so, similarly here, the fact that there was a pat down really doesn't matter, even though we spent a lot of time in our brief talking about that. The evidence being suppressed was found under different circumstances, and certainly there was no problem with that. And if the court has any other questions, I'll be happy to answer them. Otherwise, we ask that the conviction be affirmed.
Hearing none, we thank you. Ms. Martin. Ms. Smith, you have remaining time if there's anything for rebuttal. If not, then in keeping with the tradition of this court on merit cases, we will step down and brief counsel. Thereafter, we will take up the case of McIver versus the Commonwealth.